So in that opening verse, we are invited to let go of our separation, let go of our disconnection. In a certain sense, let go of our the sense of ourselves as a separate person. Not to no longer be who we are, but that kind of shell that's around us, that we are always cultivating through thoughts and actions that are always self-absorbed, self-referential. It's clear. So it says, let us, go as a river, right? All the drops in the river are all parts of the river. You really can't see the individuality, it's all a river. And so it's not that we want to lose our individuality, the uniqueness of each of us, but we don't want to always dwell in that, because that leads to a sense of, again, disconnection, separation from the whole. It's how do you find that place of individuation, but yet have that sense of connection and wholeness. And so it says, mindfulness, right? We put aside all our sense of self and separation, and just relax and become aware, mindful, body, breath. And then what we find as that deepens is there is a natural, you don't have to keep saying to yourself, we're all one, we're all one, we're all one. You know, some people think if you say it somehow that means anything. If we are all one in truth, then we don't have to say it, do we? It's something to be experienced. And so the question is, how do you experience? Well, in Buddhism, we let go of this self-absorption, this self-centeredness, right? And enter into practices that allow us to feel connection with. It's not something that we have to always manufacture. It's actually our endless manufacturing that is creating this sense of separation. So we want to let go of that. So in the talk, in the opening verse, it says, let us go as a river. Let us let go of all the stances of self, better than, worse than, equal to everybody. You know, kind of relax, just be. And in that beingness, which mindfulness helps us touch, in our little group here, we have a sense of what it's like to feel a part of something connected. And again, that's a good model for the world, right? We're just, each of us as individuals, we're cells in the world, but then as groups, we're kind of bigger cells. I don't know, what are bigger cells called when they get together? Tissues or what? Clumps? Clumps of cells. So we are clumps. But it's a model for the world. If all the people in the world who are so obsessed with their differences, right, became more attuned to their sameness, right? And that's what we want to touch in our practice, these fundamental qualities of humanness, these fundamental aspects of mind that are common to everyone. Gender, ethnicity, religion, non-religion, you know, those are all the things that differentiate us, which are fine. But we need to discover what unites us, right? What we have in common. And the practice of mindfulness, because it does not, it's not necessarily a Buddhist practice. It is a natural capacity of the mind to be present, to be aware, and to really notice what's going on. So that's, thank you for the verse. So for the last few weeks, for those of you who have been here, for those of you who have not been here, you're kind of coming in the middle of something. Well, not actually in the middle, in the beginning of something. As people know, Thich Nhat Hanh, well over a year ago, had a significant stroke, which actually put him in a coma for 3 months. But he came out of it, even though he's in his mid to late 80s. And still alive. But he's really lost the ability to speak. But he's still very present and aware and being cared for in his community in Plum Village. So sort of in his monastic community, they are sort of it's sort of like he hasn't passed yet, but he's also not as present as he used to be as a vital, active force teaching and counseling in his community. So anyhow, when we were in Plum Village in June, some of his senior monks and nuns had put together these 40 tenets of Plum Village, sort of taking some key 40. And these are kind of deeper teachings. People who are familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh know that he's very creative and inventive and experimental, and there are lots of kind of practices of the Plum Village tradition, which could be another list of 40. And if you look in the book called Happiness, which is kind of a compilation of many of these practices, you may not find any of these. These are kind of show that another side of Thich Nhat Hanh that have not been promulgated so much in his books, but is very much the way on the long retreats, the things that he has taught. So I've just kind of picked a few to share, and this is the third week. And again, for people who are new, or it's all kind of foreign to you, the talks from the prior week, 2 weeks, are on our website, so if you're interested, you can listen to. And for people who, just the whole aspect of these deeper teachings, philosophically and psychologically, of Buddhism seem a big stretch, please understand there's lots of things that go on in our community, various kinds of teachings, practices. Wednesday night we have the practices and meditation just focuses on mindfulness, mindful living. We have introductions to mindfulness and lots of classes on how to apply mindfulness. So this is kind of, we're in the deep end of the pool here. Okay? So if you can't swim, just float. All right, you don't. But please don't drown, you know, whatever you do. But I'll do my best to make them understandable. And just 2 weeks ago, I taught about the 15th, or commented on the 15th tenet, which is the awareness of suffering helps us recognize the existing conditions of happiness, and also helps prevent the creation of wrong actions and the planting of negative seeds that will bring about suffering in the future. So that was 2 weeks ago, and then last week I commented on the third, which is nirvana is the absence of ignorance and the afflictions, but not the absence of the aggregates, the sense spheres, and the domains of existence. Please, if you're interested, the commentary will explain all that. And also last week, we really touched on another one of the tenets, which is so powerful, which is it is possible to touch nirvana in the present moment. This is a very significant teaching in the Zen tradition. We don't have to wait. Nirvana, the cessation of suffering, is available to us right now. And again, the commentary helped explain that. So now I want to jump from the 3rd and the 5th to the 18th, which says, free will is possible thanks to the three trainings. Free will is possible thanks to the three trainings. So, free will means what? Choice, right? Will is sort of volition, right? Choice. And freedom means it doesn't always have to be the same. It doesn't have to be the same, you know, in America, let's say. There's a lot of stress on freedom, right? We are free to what? Well, the Bill of Rights. We are free to what, supposedly? We're free to speech. We're free to practice our religion. We're free to... What? We have freedom of the press. What? What was that? Free to assemble. You know, what? Yeah. So these are, we have all kinds of freedoms that we can do. Right? Which if you are living in a society as American society was in 1776 and 1780 and all that, we didn't have those freedoms. Somebody else, right, controlled us. And we weren't allowed to do all these things freely. So there is this kind of freedom that is kind of politically very much part of our country, as well as because we live in a highly organized and developed consumer society, a great stress is placed on what? We have freedom of choice to buy whatever we want, right? Great freedom, right? Endless choices of cereals, cars, TV programs, movies, music, right? We're free to, right? Especially these days with all these various kinds of modalities, music, and right? We're free to watch it anytime we want, right? It wasn't too long ago that what? We had to wait till Thursday night, right? And then we had to wait to see what happened next week. Do you remember that? In ancient times. But now we're free, right? Anytime we want to watch it, right? We can watch it. We don't have to wait. So there are all kinds of freedoms that we have in our modern society, and that one can decide whether how important or unimportant they are. But when we talk about freedom in terms of the Buddhist path, we're talking about freedom from suffering, freedom from delusion. And here we're talking about, in terms of free will, freedom from our conditioning. Okay? So in Buddhism, I won't go into it today, you know, karma, law of cause and effect, karma, they are a little different. But the idea is that for each of us, let's just say individually, who we are now, right? The kind of body we have, the kind of personality we have, the kind of thoughts we have, the kind of memories we have, the kind of emotional life we have, right? This was produced by the past, right? And it's summarized in causes and conditions, right? There are very clear causes, such as our parents coming together in sexual union cause this, our bodies, right? If we want to look for a cause where this body came from, we can see causation. Is that clear? You know, we are the effect of those causes that our parents made. But conditions also affected us. So even though, let's say, our parents, the famous sperm and egg came together, right? That sperm and egg developed within conditions, the conditions of our mother, let's say, and her own health and her own diet and things like that. And so even though there was a very substantial cause, there were also conditions in which that cause unfolded. Right, in the same way that we physically came into this world with a certain kind of genetic code and DNA, we were also conditioned by the environment we grew up in, right? How we were taken care of or not taken care of, the kind of parenting and nurturance or lack of that we received or didn't receive, right? We were so there are things, causes that were very clear in us, but there were also conditions, right? Many conditions, economic conditions, religious conditions, societal conditions. We went through education, teachers. You see, so we are all, we think mistakenly that we are this solid thing. Well, this is me. This is how I am, right? But in Buddhism, that's not true. How we are is often, in most cases, just how we've been conditioned. Is that clear? Okay. And if we don't understand that, right, we think all we can do is just continuing on doing the best we can. Right? We often feel there's no free will. I can't change. This is who I am. This is what conditioned me. Right? And that may be good or bad. Right? It's based on how you perceive your conditioning. Okay. So along comes our encounter with Buddhism, which says nothing is fixed. Nothing is set. There are no outer forces that are controlling us, making us a certain way. But on the other hand, we are not totally free in the sense that we are the creation of causes and conditions. Is that clear? I mean, even now we have causes and conditions, right? I mean, what? I can't will myself to be a multimillionaire, right? I have my conditions. It doesn't mean that things can't change, but right now, you know what I mean? So we all have our conditions in which we are now operating. So it's not as if we are totally, absolutely free, because we are conditioned. Is that clear? And we're still subject to conditions. But because nothing is fixed, because everything is impermanent. And even in Buddhism, the self, the me, the I, the Fred, the you, are just concepts. There's nothing fixed or solid. We are just processes. Right? Who am I? I'm just a river of thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories that are just endlessly arising and unfolding. Basically, I'm just a stream of consciousness with endless imprints from the past. Now, when I don't know that, I'm just propelled, right? Right? Is that clear? If I don't know how to steer the boat, whichever way the currents take me, whichever way the winds take me, I am blown. Is that clear? And that's most people's lives. Things, you know, life blows them this way, life blows them that way. And, you know, we're endlessly just being tossed about, internally and externally, by these causes and conditions. Okay? So Buddhism, you know, to enter a spiritual path, let's say, is to be given some very important things. Right? not only are we given the manual, right, but we are given the paddle, right? And if anybody has gone down a river, a whitewater river, without a paddle, can you imagine what that's like? Right? But you have a, if you have a paddle and you know what you're doing, it makes all the difference, doesn't it? Right? When I see the rock, I don't have to go into it. I can go around it. I can do something. Is that clear? Also, if we are not clear, we can always get a guide. That makes it easier too, if our paddling is not that expert yet. So, free will is possible for all of us. Now here it says, thanks to the three trainings. So this is... if one is to say, because Buddhism really, as developed by the Buddha, was not a religion. He never said, believe in me. Right? He taught a path of awakening, a path of how to free ourselves from suffering, a path in life, how to live intelligently and wisely and compassionately. You know, that's what it is. So if one was to say, well, what is the path, you know, what are the basic elements of the path, it's all in this thing called the three trainings. Okay, the three trainings in Buddhism are, in Sanskrit, it's Sila, Samadhi, Prajna. These are, at the core, what we are using very consciously, choosing very consciously, i.e. free will, right? From this moment forward, this is what I am practicing to move my life in the direction I want, right? There's my freedom, right? I cannot do anything about the causes and conditions that have brought me to this moment, but I can. Each of us can choose from this moment on to do things differently. Okay? So, free will. We all have that. Many people don't think they have that. And even some people who think they have it are scared by it or don't like it. Is that true? You mean it's all up to me? We're always waiting for something else to save us. Even though we don't even know it, we somehow can't believe that each of us has the capacity of moving our life away from wherever it is that is causing us suffering or unhappiness, and to move it in the direction of peace and well-being, open heart, you know, all the things we want. It's hard to believe that we have that capacity. Many of us are damaged in that place of trust. Okay. So this, you know, this idea that I have free will, no matter how I've been conditioned, no matter how damaged I think I am, or neurotic I think I am, or screwed up I think I am, or set in my ways I think I am. Right? That's not true. It's only because you think that way that change seems so difficult. Like, does everybody, you know, you might for the last 20 years have gone to Publix and bought the same cereal, right? I assure you, everybody in this room could go to Publix today and buy a different cereal. Couldn't you? Couldn't you? Of course you could. You have that ability to change. And I just picked that as a little example because people, even in things like that, go, oh, I could change. You know, that's what I have for breakfast. Yeah? You know? Right? two eggs and a bento. That's my breakfast, you know, every morning, got to have it. No, you don't. That's what you're conditioned to. That's what you like. But you could have anything, right? You could even have dinner first thing in the morning. Couldn't you? Yeah, you could. Free will. So, one is to recognize that we have it. That's a big shift for most of us. We don't often understand that ourselves. That's why we need the teaching, right? To wake us up and say, oh, you know, again, it's like if in your culture, you know, when you lived on this river and nobody had ever developed a paddle, you might think, you know, every time you put the boat in the water, it's like, you know, you pray that you don't, you know, right? Don't run aground or don't run into a rock. But when somebody comes to your village and shows you how to make a paddle and shows you how to use the paddle, right, it's a game changer. It's a life changer. Okay? So to have the teachers and teachings who come and say, you have free will. However it's been, does not have to continue. You can change. And there are many things to support you in this change. But at the end of the day, it's up to you. Right? You can have you can read wonderful things that inspire you. You can have wonderful teachers and guides and mentors. But at the end of the day, because in the morning, when we wake up in the morning, who do we wake up with? Who's the first person we encounter? Ourselves. Is that clear? And throughout the day, whether we're with people or not with people, the thoughts, feelings, perceptions that are arising in our own minds. Right? And it is our own minds that are conditioning the way we speak and the way we act. That's the truth. Okay. So, we have free will. So let's say we got that one. All right. Well, what do I do with it? Okay. So that's what the three trainings are about. Okay. And the three trainings, again, are Shila. Shila means kind of has to do with the conduct, the way we are, with the way we manifest in the world, the actions of our body and of our speech, primarily because that's what's seen. Okay? And that's really so much of how we are creating our life. Now, the mind we'll get to in a moment. So, the first thing we need to know is I need to stop doing those actions with my body and my words that are only perpetuating causes and conditions for suffering, for unhappiness, for conflict. You see what I, you know, all those things we do. I got to stop using my body. I got to stop ingesting things that are toxic for my body and my mind. Right? Got to start taking, you know, good care. Stop doing harm to my body and stop doing harm with my body to others. So we have these five trainings for lay people in Buddhism, which have to do with doing no harm with our body, which have to do with not misusing sexuality to great harm to ourselves, to another. That tell us about all the things that we consume, both in terms of drugs or alcohol, or in terms of programs, conversations, internet, you know. You know, we got to see that so much of what we are doing, the choices that we are making in our life, are very much conditioning whether we are moving our life in the direction of well-being and happiness and peace and all the qualities we want, or just continuing patterns that support unhappiness, suffering, affliction, conflict. Is that clear? So the first training has to do with conduct, which in a certain sense is the easiest because it is the most apparent. Right? We can see what we do. Right? You got drunk the night before. You acted like a jerk. You wake up with a headache. Right? Oh, cause and effect. You know, I got to stop that one. Or you said things that you now feel embarrassed about or ashamed. You know what I mean? Or you got an, argue, all kinds of stuff. You know, I got to stop that. That's easy. You see, just stop doing it. Okay? Other ways we do with our body, the things that, the food we eat, the exercise, all these kinds of things that have to do with our own body or how we treat other people's body, those are easier to change because they're in the realm of conduct. We pay attention to our words. You know, is my speech kind? Is my speech constructive? Is my speech helpful? Or are my words creating conflict? Causing pain to another person, adding confusion to a situation rather than clarity. Are they really supportive of the person I was talking to and helpful and positive? Or were they negative, or just in my speech? If I'm just gossiping, blah, 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 talking bad about other people, what is that, what am I contributing? Okay, so Shila, the first training, conduct, action, which is so important in our life, is one area that we're on with PATH that we train in. Okay? And they, again, have to do with these outward manifestations of our life, which is, the actions of our body and the actions of our speech. Is that clear? That's what's most apparent, and that's the way we act. Now, the next two are unique to the Buddhist path, the next two trainings, which are samadhi and prajna. And what this relates to is, of the two, of the body and of the mind, one would say mind is the boss. Okay? Mind's the chief. Mind's the king. Mind's the queen. The body is, unfortunately, the servant, right, of that. Okay. So many of our unskillful actions of body and speech come from our mind, right? The kind of thoughts we have, the kinds of impulses and desires we have. The kinds of confusions and misunderstandings that are maybe cultivating, that we are cultivating in our minds over and over and over. Many people have been cultivating this stuff since childhood. Ways of thinking and responding to themselves in situations which outwardly, clearly are just a source of suffering. And yet over and over and over again, we ruminate and we obsess about things that only increase our suffering, right? When we're having angry thoughts and we repeat them over and resentful thoughts, what are we doing? We're creating suffering for ourselves, and also probably when we act, we'll be creating suffering for someone else. I could go on and on, but are you clear? It's all, we need to begin to see that this mind has to be retrained. Is that clear? Now, how do we do that? One way, it's in samadhi, there are many things involved, but it has to, let's just say simply for today, we need to clarify, stabilize this mind of ours. We need to calm and quiet this mind of ours. Everybody know what I'm talking about? Everybody know what their mind is? Okay? all the thoughts, feelings, perceptions, emotions, memories, these are all arising in your mind. And because they are churning, and they're always churning in the historical ways that they've always churned, they are always cause and effect, they're always, you know, and that's the wheel we're on. There's no end to it. It just keeps repeating itself over and over again, right? Even though we change the clothes we're wearing, and we move geographically, we change jobs, and we change relationships, and we read different books, and, well, you know, we still find deep down inside, it still feels the same. Okay. Why does it still feel the same? Because inwardly, we're still just endlessly repeating the same thoughts, you know, over and over again, okay? Same reaction, same responses, same conditioning, still same perception of who I am, right? So we need to retrain the mind. The first thing we need to retrain this mind in, and this is mindfulness and concentration, we need to see clearly what's going on. Before we can change anything, we need clarity. Right? To achieve clarity, the endless roiling around of these emotions and these thoughts that we're so involved is, we need to quiet and stabilize. Okay? This is the practice of mindfulness. This is the practice of concentration. This is the practice of living in the present moment. I mean, there are many, you know, within these trainings, there are many practices and teachings, but generally, that's what we're up to. Okay? We're training first in the activities of our body and speech, bring them in accord, you know, with a positive movement in our life, away from suffering and toward goodness, right? And we're beginning to quiet and stabilize, in a certain way, objectify this mind, right? So we can do number three, the third training, which is wisdom. Okay. We want to begin to understand what's going on, right? We want to, on a psychological level, we want to see what is driving me to do this. Why do I keep repeating this over and over again, right? What is it that I'm doing, and what is causing me? You know, not just, you know, my childhood, right? That's maybe where it began, but we're no longer 5 years old, are we? We're no longer 3 years old, we're no longer seven, we're no longer 14. Right? So, while we may go historically and see the cause, right? Mindfulness and concentration and deep looking reveals right now, because these patterns are arising right now, right? Historically, we can say the cause is here, but how does it arise right now? We have to see that. To see that, there has to be some clarity of mind, right? If everything is murky, right? If when I look out, there's only fog, I can't see what's there. Right? Anybody ever drive in a thick pea soup fog? What's it like? You cruise along at 70 miles an hour, zoom, zoom, zoom? No, why not? Because you can't see what's there. Right? And yet, for many of us, that's the way we're living our life. We're just going along 60 miles an hour in the fog, and we wonder why we keep crashing. I can't believe, you know, the way things are happening. Over and over again. We find ourselves, I was just talking to somebody the other day, they're in there like, third big relationship. They're in their 40s and going, God, I thought this was going to be so different. started out so different, and yet I'm back in the same place again. Not a clue. How'd this happen to a good guy like me, who had such good intentions? You know, everybody know what I'm talking about, right? Because, you know, there has to be something, and we have to see what it is so we can be free, right? And we can't see into our minds to see what's causing us over and over again to make choices that are fundamentally flawed if we don't have any clarity. So mindfulness and concentration help clarify the mind that allow then this deep looking, this vipassana, this capacity to look into the mind, into the emotions, into the conditioning, and to really just see within ourselves what's going on. So we can stop cultivating the unwholesome and start really cultivating the wholesome. We can stop making causes that continue the perpetuation of dissatisfaction and unsatisfactoriness and suffering, and start making causes that create goodness and wholeness in our life, right? So that's the third training. What does that end up in? That's why it's called the training of wisdom. It means like we're wise people. This doesn't mean we have big beards and long white hair, right? It means our mind understands how things really are. That's wisdom, right? And not only do we have the understanding of how things really are, but we're now able, right, to infuse the actions of our body, speech, and mind with that understanding, with that wisdom, right? Now, when we've totally done it, you know what that's called? It's called the attainment of Buddhahood. It's called the attainment of full awakening. So if you ask what is the result of the three trainings, it is we become a Buddha. Right? Short of that, we are on the path to become a Buddha. Okay, a Buddha does not mean you end up looking like this. Is that clear? This is a representation. As was said earlier, we bow to the Buddha nature in us. We bow to the potential of full awakening. A fully awakened being is someone who totally sees things how they really are and no longer is involved in any type of actions of body, speech, and mind that in any way are based on any kind of ignorance or delusion. They're not contaminated with self at all. Right? All of us have that potential. You know, what is the difference between a totally ignoramus like us, who just stumbles about in life, and a Buddha? The Buddha, the light's on. Buddha sees clearly. We all have that potential. But we have to understand, coming back, that we have free will. If we don't understand we have free will, we won't understand that we have choice, and when we have choice and we have free will, we will then understand what do I choose, what path do I choose now to follow in this life. All of us were conditioned by our genetics, by our DNA, by the family we were brought in, by the culture, by the society, by school, you know what I mean? All of us have been conditioned by the things that have happened in our life. In that way, we're all equal. There's no difference at all. All of us are conditioned beings. But what separates us is some of us know that that's all it is and understand that we have the freedom in the moment to choose. The problem is most people go, you know, they look back and they go, oh, this is what happened to me, can't change that. despair. Right? Or most people look forward and go, well, I'll start changing next week. Yeah. I mean, I'll start. It looks good. Yeah, I'm going to start changing. Free will, I get it. I'll start tomorrow. Right? Today I want to kind of indulge the things I like to indulge in. Does everybody know what I'm talking about? No. Okay. Unfortunately, in our tradition, we know change can only happen in the present moment. Okay. Because the present moment, which is just the unfolding of every moment of our life, is where reality is happening. Right? The past is just imagined. Right? The past does not exist in any real way. It's gone. It only exists as memory. And memories are just mental events. They have no substance. And yet we allow them to condition us. The future is only fantasy. Right? So next time you think, I'm going to start tomorrow, say to yourself, I am having this fantasy in my mind right now that tomorrow somehow I fantasize a different me. That's all you're doing. Because the future hasn't happened in reality. Right? So that's why we like to do it. You know why? Because we like wiggle room. Hey, let me take a little wiggle room. Yeah, I'll start next week. Right? Next week I'll start. That gives me lots of wiggle room to continue to what? To just reify and dig the grooves of our conditioning just a little deeper. If we want to change, if we want to exercise our free will, we do it now. We do it today. There's no other way. See, that's again, it's like, you know, free will and knowing that I'm responsible, right? I'm in the driver's seat of my, right? Oh, can't I just be in the passenger seat? You know, no, you can be. I mean, you can live life in the passenger seat, but then stop whining and complaining that the driver's not taking where you want to go. Right? That's another way we do it. Change seats. Right? When my kids were little, you know, they were in the back. We got them these little steering wheels. They're back there going like this and that. But they really had no control over driving. It was just an illusion. Okay? Many of us, where we play with these steering wheels because we're not willing to step into the front, into the driver's seat. See, that's really growing up. I take full responsibility for my life. Everything that has happened, good, bad, wonderful, terrible in the past, has happened. There is absolutely nothing I can do about that. They've happened. Is that clear? And I'm willing to accept that. Not like that was good or bad or wish for or not, but because it happened. This is my karma. This is what happened to me. Okay? This is how I responded to it. This is what I made out of it. Right? There's nothing I can do about that, can I? But the wonderful thing about that is what? It doesn't exist anymore. Right? In any real way, other than as a conditioning of my mind and my emotions. Right? If I am not happy with it, what can I do? Change. I want to change. What are you going to change? Past is past. Future hasn't come. What's left? Okay. So this is it. Thich Nhat Hanh has a calligraphy. He says, this is it. very, very Zen kind of thing. This is it. It's wonderful because it's true and it's simple and it cuts to the heart of things. This is it. If there's a kind of way you want to show up in the world, if there's a kind of person you want to be, you know, today's the day. Good. It's not going to be perfect, but you're changing your karma by today beginning to take steps in a new direction. Okay? And by not indulging the stuff from the past. When you stop indulging the stuff from the past, you weaken them. Okay? If you start cultivating a whole new repertoire of actions of body, speech, and mind, there's your future. Right? And it's as simple as that. That's why they're called trainings. Okay? It's something we train in. It's something that all practitioners of the Buddhist path of awakening have trained in for 2,600 years. It's as simple as that. It's what we train in. Right? Anybody ever go to the gym? Do they call them gyms today? They don't. What do they call them? Do they still call them gyms? Oh, I thought maybe it was some. Anyhow, I mean, when you go to the gym, what's going on there? Training, right? People are training many different things at all different levels, but they're training, they're doing something over and over and over again that they think will what? Give them a certain result. Is it right? Isn't that what's going on? I mean, it's as simple as that. Okay, so we understand the concept of training in terms of our body. But what Buddhism teaches us is, you know, the major source of our suffering and our happiness lies within our minds. Right? It's good to have a healthy body, right? Sure. It's good to have a body that has energy of positive, you know. But, you know, we can go to the gym forever. We can work out 4 hours a day and still be miserable. Right? We can go to the gym 4 hours a day, have a great, strong, buff body, or whatever they call them these days, and still have miserable relationships, can't we? Yeah. So it's the mind that we need to be most attentive to. So the 18th is free will is possible thanks to the three trainings. Thanks to that book I got on how to use a paddle, and thanks to the teacher who taught me how to use the paddle, and thanks to all those months of training myself, I can go down Class 4 Rapids and I enjoy it. Right? It used to be a frightening, confusing experience. Now it's enjoyable. Why? Because I know what I'm doing. That's what teachings and trainings are about. They teach us how to do it. So it's not a mystery. You know, for many people, this life is a mystery. It's like fog. We don't understand why sometimes we hit things and sometimes we don't. When the fog lifts, you'll see everything. You won't run into anything anymore. We have 3 minutes. Are there any questions? Anybody totally disagree with what I've said? Yes.
In our work life, if we have a job or a task that involves planning something to happen in the future, what's the best way to still be present in the moment when what we have to do?
Yeah, so that's very good. You know, I mean, people sometimes hear us go, what? No past, no future? I mean, a lot of life is planning. I mean, a lot of work is planning, and sometimes a lot of life is kind of reflecting on the past. So we, you know, we do have a mind that has capacities, right? Logical capacities, insightful capacities. We have the capacity of, imagining a future in terms of work, kind of, you know. So, that's fine. Now, when do you do that work about the future? You do it in the present. Right? So, what we're talking about is all, the other 90% of the time, when we're just mulling over, fantasizing about the future, expectations, or we're about to do something, we kind of think how it's going to go, we kind of plan our, you know what I mean? 90% of our future thinking, I would say, and I'm, all right, maybe 80% or 75, everybody's different, is not that. You know, in Buddhism, in terms of thinking, we talk about, and this is what you're getting at, we call it directive thinking. Right, which means you are using this capacity to plan and think ahead in a very directive way, very conscious way. It's not that other stuff which produces worry, which produces anxiety, which produces fear. It's not that other fantasy. We're just kind of imagining, you know, how things will be. Or a lot of people just have fantasies. If they fantasize, you know, kind of imagining themselves or imagining situations, you know, all that is just taking us away from the present. But also, that's also just conditioning our minds to just, you know, why do I spend half my life fantasizing? Because I spent the first half of my life fantasizing, and that's just a well, you know, that's just a well-oiled track. If I want to change, I got to stop right now. Yeah, but. Yeah, there are. I mean, we do have a wonderful mind that we can use very effectively to plan, to anticipate, to do things in a directive way when it's needed. Does that answer your question? So that's fine. Yes. Any other quick questions about? So again, free will, we all have it. Question for each of us. Do we believe that? And if I do believe it, am I going to exercise it? Okay. Number two, if I believe it and I decide I'm going to exercise it, how do I exercise it? That's the three trainings. Right? And the three trainings are about something you do in your life. You don't have to go off to a monastery. You don't have to go to the Himalayas. Right? You begin to do it in your life. So that's what Buddhists are up to. If you ever wonder what Buddhists are up to, they're up to the three trainings. Okay. But, you know, there's no neon light. Three trainings. We don't have that on Nebraska. Maybe we should get one, kind of a neon light. Three trainings. So people know we're not an auto body shop or something. So good. We'll stop here. Thank you.